Puppet masters almost surely have a plan. There's clearly maybe something there beyond the realm of man. And until you've thoroughly tested every last close just
That's true, Dr. Zaius.
Very well.
Where would we be without THC? 'Cause we know they're lying to us, just don't know to what degree. Yeah, where would we be without THC? The highest side chat show, Greg Carwood Company.
How's it going, higher side chatters? Drinking a little drink, smoking a little smoke, and ready to dive straight into the deep end of the weird pool. From sunny San Diego, I'm Greg Carlwood, and it has been quite a while since I pre-introduced a show, but this one is pretty unique, and it might help to say a few things up top. Today we're talking about a little something called the Bach Saga. And brace yourself, because I think the best description of it is a dense body of esoteric knowledge passed down very carefully in a very methodical oral tradition through one prominent family whose lineage has come to an end. So they're opening up the floodgates in hopes the knowledge contained within will live on. That's pretty much it in a nutshell. And here on THC, we've spent a lot of time on the realization that the shadowy elite have put great effort into wiping out pagans, Gnostics, indigenous people, and anyone else they found along the way, destroying their culture, libraries, and writings, and promptly converting them to a proper god and educating them on the quote-unquote official story. So knowledge of this type that survives always gets me excited. In this case, the Bach Saga contains an elaborate mythology that describes how our reality was formed and where we came from. It contains a history radically different from what we hear in the mainstream. And most interestingly, it contains a very detailed description of the origins of the Swedish and Finnish and ultimately English languages, an etymology describing the development of letters, sounds, words, and language that's far different from what the mainstream says, but it's still very internally consistent. It really impresses me, and it touches on so many things I find interesting, including the Hollow Earth, always near and dear to my heart. Consider this one of the missing puzzle pieces you just found under the couch, and this saga is going to be relayed by one of the few people qualified, one of the few people who studied it inside and out and can speak on it very methodically and accurately. His name is Jim Chestner. He's a fascinating guy who's out there walking a simple path consistent with a Gnostic lifestyle he takes very seriously, and I respect the man for being so genuine in this day and age. But as a podcast producer, it's a bit frustrating because he's not being patched in from some Silicon Valley studio apartment talking to me on a 4K webcam with a Google Fiber connection. No. He's holding an old laptop over a shoddy Wi-Fi router in an open-air location complete with roosters, dogs, and a few other background distractions. But be that as it may, I think it adds a little ambiance in this situation. This is really the only way a story like this gets told, and I personally think there's more than enough here to mull over. So let's do the damn thing, guys. Park your ass and pack your glass, because the Bach Saga and Jim Chestner are coming at you.
Pack it and park it, tune in and spark it, because Greg's about to open up your mind. Armed with information about the secret manipulation and the wisest aficionados he can find. Curtain on what we thought we knew for certain, so we can see the world with a brand new set of eyes. You're listening to the Higher Side.
All right, people, we know the nefarious puppet masters of the power pyramid work hard to control our thoughts and feelings about nearly everything. They've rewritten history to suit their needs for control and have stripped out any real insight or enlightenment from it, because knowledge is power. And power ain't for us. But not all hope is lost, because many of us have come to realize that the occulted knowledge passed down through various secret societies and esoteric orders, as well as the oral traditions of enlightened people, are the real places we should be looking if we want to piece the human story back together. Well, today we're going to take an in-depth look at one such oral tradition called the Bach Saga, which has been passed down through the ages among the Bach family, and in 1984, the last remaining member, Eeyore Bach, hoping to preserve the knowledge, started sharing the secret story of humanity among his closest friends. And lucky for us, we have just such a friend with us today. His name is Jim Chestner, and Jim is an elder leader of the Order of the Gnostics and has taken up the task of sharing the Bach Saga with the world since the passing of his friend Eeyore in 2010. We've been able to catch him just days before setting off for Finland to shoot the third film in a series about the saga, and I couldn't be more psyched. Jim, welcome to The Higher Side.
Thank you, Greg. It sounds really good. What an introduction there.
I try, man. So, just as a primer, I pulled this off the website. It says, "The saga explains the origins of man on Earth and the origins of the Nordic culture that, according to the tradition, existed long before Babylon and Mesopotamia." So that's what we're talking about, a body of knowledge older than the origin cultures that we're told about and has been hidden away for various reasons. So, Jim, I know that this body of knowledge is very old and very dense, and it's best to kind of lay it out methodically so we don't confuse the listeners. Just give us a little more context for where the story comes from and why it's important before we really get into the material itself.
I would just have to start that this whole story, it comes from the sun. We put everything to the sun. There was one family in Finland that, according to this story, into this saga, they're the oldest family on the planet. And this family was called Bach. And in this family, they passed down one oral history of humanity. Today, we give history from the front. Where we are now, we go 50 years back. We go 200 years, who we were, 500, and by the time we get to 2,000 or 3,000, we're kind of guessing what we were in those days. Mm-hmm. Whereas in this story, we start from the beginning of the human, and we come to now. So when you read a book, you don't read it from the back to the front. You read it from the front to the back. So this history begins in the beginning, and it is a creation story. It is a mythology called the Vainamoinen mythology. It's a history. It's a saga called the Bach saga. And it's based in one, what we call root alphabet, one beginning alphabet. They say that in the beginning there was the word, but the words are made of sounds. So the sounds are before the word. Mm-hmm. And so this story is based in one root alphabet, which is 29 sounds. Each sound has a mark for the sound and a meaning for the sound. And in this saga, it gives one story. It's based around sun, moon, stars, and the planet. Mm-hmm. And these people, they were called Oser people. The sound A-S, Os, Oser. And they had a true logic. That's my rooster going. And they had a true logic called astrology, what we call astrology. Mm. And this Os is the Os people. True means to believe, and logi means logic. So their belief in logic, the Osners. So in this logic, they said that there's only one sun. They say there is only one moon. And they say there is only one planet. And there are countless, countless stars. They say that this universe has always been here. It didn't just come one day. And nobody made the universe. And uni means one, universe. Solo, sun, soul. It means one. And mono means one moon. So we say that there's one sun. And today we want to call the sun a medium yellow dwarf star. It's going to burn out in 7,464,211 years, somebody said, on some kind of computer. But in our story, we say that the sun has always been, and the sun will always be, and the sun is not a star. And what makes a sun different than anything else is because the sun shines its strala, its light rays, in every direction, all through the universe, through the vacuum. All these rays are shining in every direction constantly. The sun doesn't go on and off. And even from the backside of the sun, it's shining rays backwards. So the sun is shining everywhere in the universe, the sun shines. And when these stralas, this astrology, these stralas of light, as they travel through the vacuum, they come to these things that we call stars. And these stars are made from three materials. They're made from ice, metal, and gas. And when these straws of light leave from the sun and they go out 3 light years, 60 light years, 100 light years, because these light rays in the vacuum, these light rays of the sun can go forever. The farthest star that we see out there, the sun can shine past that star. So as these light rays are leaving from the sun, they come to one thing we call one star. And when it hits this ball of gas, metal, or ice, the light cannot go through the ball. So it hits the ball and reflects a light back to us here on the planet. So we're saying that there are not thousands and millions of suns out there. There's not extra universes out there. There's one universe. And that all the stars are a reflection of one sun. If the sun didn't shine, the stars wouldn't shine. The moon wouldn't shine because the moon is a reflection of the sun. And this planet Earth would be completely black, frozen, no life, no soul, nothing going on this planet. So the way that people thought a long time ago was the sun was the creator. It creates the life, it keeps everything growing, and in the end it burns it away so the new can come. So in the logic of these Oz people, there was only one sun. The moon is different than the sun and anything else because the moon, we only see one side of the moon. And the moon we call Ra, not the sun. Ra is the moon, and Ra has to do with our, what we call gravity. They call gravity. And this planet is a special, special creation. If you think that the sun is what's creating the light in the universe, and we call the sun Udin, and the sun is now creating all the life on this planet. If the sun didn't shine, there would be no life. There'd be no light. There'd be no soul. There would be no consciousness. So everything that we think, every word that we speak, every thought that we think, everything that we smell, all that we see around us is created from sun, from soul. You see?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I'll just keep going on.
Well, I mean, I know you could probably just keep going forever, and it is so dense, but I know that a big part of the story revolves around a hole at the top of the Earth, which definitely gets my ears to perk up. Can you walk us through that part of the story or how that incorporates into this wealth of information?
Yes, I'm heading that direction right now.
Sure.
So this story in this, what we call this root language, the sound et means one. Et tuo tre. And the sound plan means a plan. So it says in the word planet that there's only one plan. So in our story, Mars and Venus and Saturn, these are not planets. These are stars. It says that a planet must have plants. And this is the only ball that has plants. Hmm. And so it says that the sun had one plan. That to create one incredible thing that it had never created before. There were millions of stars. There was a moon already in its place. But the sun decided that one day that it would make one planet, one ball that had life on it, that had water, that had soul, something that's nowhere else in the universe. There is no other places like this, nowhere. It's a vacuum out there. And the farther away can you get from the sun, the colder it gets. So this sun created one egg. This egg left from the sun, and this egg had one, what we call one ball of magma, what we call magma in English. They call it magma. And this sun put off this ball of magma, and around this ball of magma was one sack of water. And around this sack of water was one shell called atmosphere. And we were floating to the universe like a little sun, like an egg, the yolk, the water around the yolk, in the shell of atmosphere. And when this ball got exactly the perfect distance from the sun, not because the next ball in is too hot for life and the next ball out is too cold for life. So when this planet got to the exact distance from the sun, this magma exploded and it just went boom. And when it exploded, it blew all the continents exactly where they are today. We weren't all sitting on one side of this planet. It blew Australia down where Australia, it blew Antarctica down to the bottom. It blew South America where it is, Europe, China. This whole explosion, this magma, as it blew these continents, they all came out in the form of granite. And in the very same second of this explosion, this water bubble around this hot ball of magma, it exploded, it popped, and it rushed in and filled in the spaces between the hot rock. So this planet was created in one flash, not 7 days. And in the very, very beginning of this planet, the very first sound was the wind. And as this planet was still in a very hot, molding kind of a form, as this water rushed in and started to make the rivers, started to make the oceans, the lakes, as it rushed in and filled in those spaces between these continents, there was one hot air bubble that came from the center of the planet, one gas ball that rose to the very top of the Earth. And in these days, the Earth wasn't sitting on its side like it is today. This side, in these days, the planet was sitting straight up and down. The axle of the pole was spinning in harmony with the moon. It wasn't tilted over. This story tells about the tilt. And as this hot ball of gas rose to the very North Pole, the very top of the Earth, it created one huge cavern, 250 kilometers across, and it created one cavern, a hole in the very North Pole. And as this gas made this dome, part of this gas went up even more and made one tunnel. And from the top of the tunnel, the very last little part of this hot gas made one little small round room. It's shaped like a Santa Claus hat, if you can think. It is a round hat with this part that falls over and a little round ball on the top. And this hole is still there today. This is what we would call in this story the underworld. There is one entranceway, one temple, 30 kilometers east of Helsinki. We worked for years to get inside. It's one ancient temple from before ice time. And there is one tunnel that will go down inside this hollow earth at the top of the North Pole. A long time ago, the axle of the planet was sitting straight up and down. And in this saga, it says if you went to the top of the true North Pole, not the North Pole up on top, but if you follow the axis of a globe, if you go to the actual true North Pole, it comes on one island, 3 kilometers in front of Helsinki, Finland. And in some of my videos, I explain about this. But yes, there is this hollow earth thing. It's a conscious thing. It's an incredible thing what's inside this thing. People did use this, but that's another story if we want to go into what's inside this thing. We can do that also.
Yes, I definitely want to get into what's inside, but it's also interesting to note that in this saga, the hole in the top of the earth is referred to as the original Holy Land. Right?
Yes, yes. On this island, this axle of the planet, we have many, many names for it. We can call it one lance. A lance is one pole, and the earth is one ball. So you have one lance in the middle of the ball. That's where the word balance, we say balance, so you don't get the association of ball with bow. But ball in root language is ball, and lance is a pole. So this planet has one lance in the middle of it, and that is the balance. So a long time ago, the pole was sitting straight up and down, and we were in balance. the pole tilted over 23 degrees and we fell out of balance. But if you go to the very top of this lance, or we can call it one axle, we can call it one axis, but we also call it one a pole, north pole, south pole, but we also in the story call it one E. And E is what in English we call I. It's a pole with a dot, like Hawaii. And E is one pole, and a little dot above the E is the North Star. And so at the top of the E of the planet on this island in the granite, still there today, there is one hole. From the beginning of the human race, there is one hole in the granite in the very top of the E or the axle of the planet. And this is where the word holy comes from. The hole in the top of the E. Also, every man, if he looks at the end of his E where that little dot comes out, he has one hole in the end of his E. So every man can be one holy man. And straight above this island, if you go straight up in the sky, you'll come to what we call the North Star or Polaris. So we say that the true North Pole is on one island. You can take one ferry boat. In one of my videos, Welcome to Hell, I explain about this hole and what it was and what part it had. It says the first two humans on the planet were born in this hole.
Yeah, man. I love that video. All the ones I've seen, they just add more and more to the story. And as you get deeper and deeper, you kind of get more of it. You understand more of it. A big part of it is, like you just said, the movie Welcome to Hell. Hell, of course, now we think of it as a negative place, thanks to the Vatican. But I guess hell wasn't always demonized in the way that the Catholics decided to demonize it, right?
No, I think if you look in the dictionary, there's more than 60 words that begin with hell. Number one, it's not spelled with two L's, it's spelled with one L. And, you know, you have Helen and you have Hellas, which is Greece, and you have Helvetia, which is Switzerland. And we have the word help and hello. And so hell is only one out of 60 some odd words that has a negative. And that's the only people who speak negative of hell is of the Catholics and the Muslims. They're the only ones who have one. It's one place that you go if you don't do what they say, you know. But hell was a real place, you know. But the thing about it is hell has been such a fear factor. You know, so many generations, all our foremothers, forefathers, people, all the Aborigines, all the indigenous people, you know, if we don't do what we say, we go to hell. So, I mean, it's, if you say the word hell, people, their ears, they twitch because it's so negative. We've been taught that hell is this burning place of fire, but it's not at all. Hell was actually the center of what we call one pagan dome. It was a whole dome of pagan, all these Celts, all these Druids, the Vikings, the whole planet was pagan at one time. The Red Indians, the Aborigines, and even us from Northern Europe, we were pagan. And they had one center from the beginning of time that was called hell. And in Swedish language, the word for the holy is called hellig. The whole E ground, G means the ground. So in the story, we say that the land around the hole in the top of the E is the Holy Land. And this is one, if you go from this hole, this true North Pole, and you make one radius, 125 kilometers, it goes down to Estonia, and you turn this around, you have one ringland at the very top of the planet with this island in the middle of the ringland with this hole in the middle of this island. And this was what we call the Holy Land. It was the land around the Holy. Later on, it became Israel, but Israel is not the true Holy Land because there's no hole in the top of the E there.
Right. That was like a bait and switch to throw people off the scent.
Yeah. So this ringland, they call Asgard. They call it Udinma, and Udin was the sun. They call it Midgard. It was the garden in the middle, the Midgard. Mid means middle, and gourd means garden, the land in the middle. It was also called Os hell, and that's from os hell. They make hellos. The Greek is hellos, os hell. It had many names, but hell was the name for this ringland, this real, true holy land. And this hell was from ancient times, but in 1050, this church is making two arms that are coming up. I just want to finish this little hell story about it for just a minute. And from one side, from the Greek Orthodox, from Constantinople, there come one army called Greek Orthodox with this crucifix. And from the other side, there was another race of people that had divided, and they were called the Roman. And from the Roman Catholics, this army's coming up. And as they come into your land, your pagan king can no longer be pagan because he cannot be the king because Jesus is the king. You have to get a king that accepts it's been converted. So all these stories about these horrible kings we've had, they're all from church time. Mm-hmm. So as pagan are seeing these people coming up, this army's coming up, by 500 they're in England, 600 they're in Saxon land, and what they do is they come in and they get all your elders together. They have these priests that are trained in Latin and Greek Orthodox, and nobody can read this except for the Pope and the priest, so you can't intercept these notes. And these priests are coming up and they're sending these letters back to the Pope to tell them exactly who the elders, who the shamans, who the people who have the knowledge. And so they just send these people up, and they wipe them out. And when you wipe out the knowledge of the tribes, when you knock out the people with the knowledge, then the people have to come to church and listen to what the Pope said. Mm. So anyway, this church had already written in the book that hell was the worst place in the world because hell was this ancient pagan information system. And by 987, they had got to the Russia from the Greek Orthodox side. And from 1008, they got to the Swedish side. And now this little country in between, Finland, with this place called hell, they had to destroy hell because they had already written it. It was the worst place and only the horrible people go to it. And they were putting in this new Christian. And so on the 24th of July in the year 1050, this Pope Leo the Ninth, one Saxon Pope, he sends 30,000 army men, mercenaries from Helvetia, which is Switzerland today. And this army comes up to Sweden. They come into Sweden. They take the Swedish king and a bishop, and they go to one island called Åland, and they kill everybody. And then they go to hell in southern Finland. And they make a ring around this 250-kilometer radius land, around the Holy Land. They make a ring around the Holy Land, these 30,000 paid murderers. And they come and they kill everybody in hell, and they burn hell. And we had family trees we call oak trees. They burned all of our family trees, and they left hell in destruction, completely destroyed. But this family who had this story, they escaped, and they went up into the north. And for 500 years, hell laid in complete ruin. And then in 1550, exactly 500 years later, this family, they started to rebuild hell. They came back into South Finland, but this time they renamed it. And they didn't call it hell anymore. They called it Helsinki. So Helsinki is the name, the new name for the word we call hell from before. And that's a little story about hell. It's a real place, but it's no place where bad souls go to. It's talked about in the Norse mythologies. They talk about hell. And yeah, it has a feminine, hell is a feminine story.
Yeah, I love that story. I love hearing about the corruption and the way that knowledge has been wiped off the planet. I mean, I definitely think there's something to the idea that the Vatican and the Roman Catholic Church has done so much to destroy any real knowledge. And, you know, that a lot of people talk about that, but it fits centrally in this story. So I love that aspect.
We've lost our history. This story says that the human race has been here millions of years. You know, for years and years, I mean, I know your friend with some of these other people, like Graham. I've tried to get this story to him for years, you know, and also the beautiful Russian lady,
Sylvia,
and Michael Cremo. There's several people who say, hey, we've been here longer than just the 50,000 years. And this story says we've been here more than 100 million years. But this temple that we'll talk about in a minute, it's from the paradise time, but from before the time that the axle tilted, when the whole planet was tropical. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's like both the all saying that there was some kind of a ancient civilization. There's some kind of reason why we find pyramids, you know, down in Chichen Itza, and why we find pyramids in Egypt, and why we find them in Bosnia, and why we find them in China, or why we find them in India. You know, where did the idea of the pyramid, why did all these different cultures, that there must have been some kind of an ancient culture that gave this information to all these different cultures, how to do this, because they're all doing it. It didn't just pop up one day and have a side that we'll make a pyramid. And, you know, and there's a whole mathematics. That's a whole nother story. But, you know, it's a lot of people have done a lot of research, and they've done really, really well. And they're really looking deep. And it's really a lot of people who want to know what we really are and where we really came from and who we really are. And they have a lot of pieces, but they don't know how to put it all together in the ring. And I feel that this saga would let these people realize that all their thoughts and all their time of thinking like this and taking shit from everybody, all this institutions, academic people, you know, being shunned because, oh, you said it was 35,000 and it can't be 30,000. It can only be 10,000 because of, you know, Graham, all of them, they talk about, you know, this, you can't bring anything out like this because you can't be a professor anymore. So,
right.
Yeah, it's horrible. We've been here a long time. I don't know. I mean, the answer to the, like, the first question, you know, for me in my life was, you know, who's making up this movie? Where is this life? Where do I come? Where do you come from? I mean, who's made this telephone? I mean, who made this house? I mean, what? And then when he told me that the sun, everything we see, these computers we're looking into, we're talking through, the floor we're standing on, every cell in our body is made of sun. And that made, like, wow, that's really, really makes sense. If the, you know, sun doesn't shine, there's no soul. It's like our souls come from the solar. And, you know, a long time ago, people, they looked up to the sun. They built the sun temple because they felt like the sun is the consciousness. If the sun doesn't shine, there is no consciousness. So it's making up everything we see.
Yeah.
And so people realize this. And they looked up and they built the sun temple because they felt like the sun was looking down and smiling and saying, hey, look, the people built the sun temple for me. So it's not like some UFO reason they built this thing, so people only up atop, they thought the sun was looking down. Then they also said the moon had consciousness. And the moon was looking down. The man in the moon is called Ra. And so they felt they, when they built a moon temple for the moon, that the moon was looking down and smiling. They didn't think about some god who's sitting out there on a star that was looking down. They just realized that the sun and the moon, they're making our gravity, they're our water system. Everything's made by the sun and the moon.
Mm-hmm.
So they worshiped the sun and the moon. But they did have gods and goddesses. But gods and goddesses come later. The sun and the moon is before the concept of gods and goddesses.
Mm-hmm. I've heard you tell this story a couple different times in a couple different ways, and it did really resonate with me, this idea that we think of the earth as our mother, and you could think of the sun as the father, and the sun's rays penetrate the mother earth, and thus everything else is born out of the mother earth. I think that really is a simplistic and easy to understand cosmology of how this all came to be.
Yeah, I mean, in the story, it says that the moon is male and female. There's the front side of the moon is called Ra.
Mm-hmm.
And the dark side of the moon is called Mar. And Mar is the female side. It doesn't mean negative. It just means the mystical side. We don't know what's going on in the back of the moon. And the light side of the moon is called Ra. So the Ra is represented by the king and queen, and it's, the moon is male and female. The earth is only female. It, mm-hmm. There's no masculine represents the earth. It's the mother earth, and it's made from magma. and it's spelled M-A-G-M-A, or M-A-G-M-A. But, and this G in the middle, like I said, in the sound system, the sounds have meanings. So the sound G or gay means the groomed or the ground. So you have M-A, and then you have gay. You pull the gay down, you pull the groom down, and if you look on top, you have mama. M-A, gay, M-A. The ground is our mama, and it's made from magma. So the word mama comes from this red stuff that's in the center of our planet. And the sun is actually is represented by male and female. It has a form around, anything round is female. Anything is like a pole is masculine. So the sun, it's one disc up there. And it's represented by in our story, the god and the goddess. In the mythology, we have god and goddess. And this is a mythology. This is not a religion that I'm speaking about. Mythology is much, much older than religion. There's only really three religions on the planet, and that's the Hebrew, the Christian, and the Muslim. And they believe in one God who sits up there in a space somewhere. Whereas mythologies, we have gods and goddesses. We have a whole pantheon of gods and goddesses. So the women, they can go for the female deities, and the men, we can go to the men deities. So the female is 50% of the mythology, and the religion, she's kind of cut out of the story.
Right.
Yeah, so this is a mythology, and so we do have people who represents the sun. The ideal of god and goddess would be the earth goddess is, in this story, she's called the swan. She's the children maker. And the moon god and goddess is called Ra and Maya. And the sun god and goddess, he's called Gube, and she's called Guma. Finnish language, she's called Akka, he's called Ukko, and in English, he's called Per, and we're called, and she's called Ella. And Per means father for us, like we are all sons and daughters of Per. We're Per sons. So Per is our father. He's our parent. We come from his sperma. So in this sound system, I'm not going to go so much into how this linguistics works today, but yeah, so the ideal that the sun is the creator, and this whole planet was full of nature, butterflies and fish and lizards and everything. It was created for us, the human being. There's no other planet anywhere else in the solar system. This is the only one that has plants on it. It's a plant. And this sun created this planet for us, the people. It was the most precious gift it had ever given anything. There's no life anywhere in the universe. I know this blows all the UFO people, but anyway, this says that there's nobody else out there. That this sun created this planet full of nature, full of beauty, and then one day it created a human being. And we have a story about how the human being was created. I mean, we could go into that or whatever, you know, that's, but anyway, this planet is for us, you know, this, and what makes us the people different than the nature is the sun gave to us four different things. It gave us linguistics. We can speak. The squirrel, he can like, okay, you know, okay, but he can't really go into detail about look at the tree with the green leaf and look at the vein in the leaf and look at the brown edge on the leaf and look at serrated leaf. So we can, with the linguistics language, we can describe this incredible nature around us, which gives us a higher appreciation than the animal out there. The sun also gave us fire. The first woman was given fire through one lightning bolt because the fire was something that the human beings could use. The women before, they would take one stone and hollow out the stone, they would fill it full of water, they'd build one fire under it, and then they put these leaves from the tree and from the bush, and this hot water, this bubbling water, would suck something, some energy out from the leaf. They call tayang, but we call energi or energy, and these women and these people were drinking this tea, but with the fire we could extract it. So the fire was given to us from the very beginning. It was called Hell Tea. We're very healthy people, hell tea, because we were drinking tea from hell. They were burning 40,000 women a year in Middle Europe for drinking tea. Witches, they call them. So anyway, the fire, the linguistics, the third thing that we got was mathematics, what they call matematik. And matema is female. So the mathematics, it's not pa-te-pa, it's ma-te-ma. Mathematics was given to the female. And mathematics is just a ring, it's a circle, it's a pole, and it's a center point. If you make a center point in the dirt, and you draw a ring around that center point, and you put a pole in the middle, the sun would make this shadow Q. And Q is quadrat. It's a sundial. So all mathematics, our computers, everything is based around a ring, a pole, and a center point or a dot. So mathematics was given to the first people. They had it from the very beginning, but it was more of a female thing. And the fourth thing that the sun gave to the people that it didn't give to the nature was the walking stick. Because in the nature, when the bird can't fly and the animal cannot walk and the fish cannot swim anymore, it falls on the ground, it's finished, it can't go anymore. But the human being, one day when we find that we cannot walk anymore, we can get one walking stick. It's a little bit, it gives us a few more weeks, a few more months of getting around. A walking stick was a very valuable thing. Today we have hospitals, so we don't need walking sticks. But before, when you couldn't walk with your stick, it was time to go away in these days. But it gave us a little bit extra, like I said, when we can still go a few more weeks or months. So, yeah, these are like gifts. But this planet is made for the people. Today we treat it like we do. And we think there's some other place to go. And we do all what we do. And there's nothing we can do. We live in this normal world, this society. But everything that we do today is toxic. The life of this saga, people would not even think to hurt the earth. The water was pure. The air was pure. People cared. I mean, we really realize in these days that this earth was a gift from the sun and the moon and that we really should take care for it. It was really brains of the people in the ancient times.
Right. Our attitude now seems to be that we can just trash the planet. We've lost the connection to it and we'll just wait until they colonize Mars, supposedly, and we'll get a new planet. But we wouldn't have that mindset if we thought of this more as our home that we're actually a part of.
It's your kid's home.
Yeah, absolutely. We should care more, but we've been shoehorned into a dirty, wasteful system. We don't get to choose our energy sources. Major companies do more damage than individuals ever really could. But I did want to get back to the hole a bit more and this excavation that you were a part of for some time going down into the inner chamber. You sent me a picture of you at the entrance of this cave-like hole. Very cool. But I pulled this little paragraph off a website. I don't think it was yours, but it gives a good description for people. It says, while excavating, on the other side of the door, they found that the stone hallway continued into a sine wave signature for some distance and then turned into a right spin spiral corridor that went 10 to 15 miles into the earth. Lining the hall were arched doorways on both sides. Behind the first door, they found a life-size golden statue of the last Asur king and a room full of priceless artifacts. If one considers that the portion of the hallway that had been excavated to date is just the beginning of a large cave system, and can be presumed that each successive chamber holds more relics and a statue of every Asur king, going all the way back through the lineage to Frey. I mean, that's pretty amazing, man. Can you give us some more information about this excavation and what this inner chamber might have been used for in the past?
We haven't come to that golden door yet, but anyway, yeah, I'll explain what's inside this thing. I sent you a picture.
Yes, great picture.
All right, that entranceway there is the entrance to the underworld, to this hollow earth. In these old times, when we go back to the time when the planet was sitting straight up and down, and where Hell or Helsinki is today was the very North Pole. And the planet was spinning around in harmony. We weren't tilted over. And at the very, very top of the planet, if he stood on the top of the planet, the sun never, it never went down. It made a golden ring around and around the top of the earth. So in the middle of this Midgard or hell or the Garden of Eden, it was a 24-hour sun. And in these days, the whole planet was tropical. The ice, even the North Pole had bananas and papayas. The ice came and we tilted over, and the story tells about that. And the people were living all over this planet, more people than we have today, and they were all in link. They were all in contact through one elaborate system to this North Pole, to these Asur people, to this Bach family. And the people on this planet, they appreciated this king and queen. There was a king and there was a queen of the whole ball in the beginning. And this king and queen, they lived in one, they had one system called Yehovah, what we call Jehovah. They call Yehovah. And the sound Yeh means to give. Yeh, yes, Yeh. And the sound Hov or Hov, means the court of the castle, the court, the hove. Also, it comes from the word hoof, which is the horseshoe, which is shaped like a good luck, the hove, the hoof. And the sound ah meant the Asur people. So it was one giving system where people could give to the court of the Asur. And the people, this whole planet was divided into ringland. Billions of people living on this earth, and they were all connected through one system of children making, one information system to this highest family, to this Bach family sitting at the North Pole in the middle of this ringland with the sun going around and around. This is called the paradise time. And Pa-Ra-Dis. Pa is the Papa and Ra is his son, the king. So the Pa-Ra, the paradise, the paradise. And they had one system where in these days there was gold all over the planet. It had no value because there was no money system as we have it today. It was just something that you could make beautiful handicraft. Gold belongs to the sun because gold, it never tarnishes. When you make something to gold, you don't have to keep polishing. So it really reflects, it belongs to the sun, the gold. And it was everywhere. And people were making beautiful and beautiful handicrafts. Stuff that we don't even know how to make today. It wasn't made for time. People weren't working by the hour. These people were creating something for the highest family on the planet. It was out of complete love. They were creating this beautiful handy. We call it aesthetics. In root language, they call it estetique. And S is the sun. Ta means to take. And teek means time, like tick-tock, tick-tock, antiquity. So estetique or aesthetics is something that when it's made, it should be forever because it's so beautiful. It's made out of gold, and gold is forever. And if somebody doesn't destroy it, it will last forever. And every 50 years was one heir of Ra. And Ra was the king. He made the race, the Ras of humans.
Era, okay.
Okay, so every era was about 50 years. Because this king, he became king at 27, and about 77, he retired, became the old king, and the new king became, because every generation of this Bach family was like that. And this king and this queen, they had this system where they were sending the one most beautiful handicraft from over 2,000 ringlands. This planet was divided into over 2,000 ringlands. And a ringland was 250 kilometers, about 180 miles in diameter. And they were shaped in this, actually rings. We call them ringlands, but they were actually hexagons. So it was like a football when you can put hexagons and make a ball out of. And when they say that the four corners of the world, the four corners of the world is where the four hemispheres meet. And the four hemispheres of the earth, they meet at the North Pole and the South Pole. So hell is a place where the four corners of the earth actually come together. It's the only place. They all come together at this hole in the top of the axle. That is the true four corners where they all meet. And Every 50 years, they would send one of the most beautiful handicraft from each of these ring lands. They would send it up to hell, and it was given to the Asur, to the king, and he would collect this stuff for 50 years. Now, when he became the old king, the new king was coming, the new Ra, they started a new Yehovah system, a new giving to the court of the Asur. And so they needed a place to store all these beautiful handicrafts that were made more than 100 million years ago. The story says that the paradise time is longer than the ice time. And it says that the ice came on this planet 50,010,032 years ago is when the axle tilted and the ice came. There's another story for that. So anyway, 30 kilometers to the east of Helsinki, there was this entranceway that went down to this huge opening to this hollow earth. And this entranceway went down underneath this hill that we call Kivelivori today. It's the hill, it's a granite hill. And this tunnel, it went down and went into this empty 180 mile, 250 kilometer radius, massive empty spot in the North Pole. And there they started to carve the wall away. And they made like one pathway. So they carved two or three or how many meters, they carved a wall, and then it left a path at the bottom. And they started to create one spiral road. It starts to go down and down and down, around and around this huge empty opening that sits underneath Helsinki today. And they plated the walls and the path with gold. So when you went inside this hole in the top of the earth, you could take one candle, and this gold walls and gold path, it reflected like New York Saturday night. He only needed one candle. And they started to build these chambers for each generation, for each heir of Ra, from each Heri-Ud, period, Heri means the father. They built three rooms, three chambers. Into this granite. And two of these rooms were storerooms where they could store these beautiful pieces of handicraft from this heir of Ra, from this Yehovah system. And they had one small room out front where it was called the showroom. All gold-plated floor, all gold-plated walls, everything gold-plated. And this father of the planet, he could go in there with one candle. And he could go to one of these two store chambers, pull out one of these pieces of incredible, beautiful art made of gold, and put in the showroom. And now with his candles, he could examine the work that this craftsman had made. These are things that they're like Fabergés of today. I mean, that's all they had to do. They didn't have jobs like we did. They just had to sit around and make beautiful things. And so each one of these generations of this Bach family, they made one solid gold statue of the Allfather at that time. And there he is with a solid gold statue, and he's standing there with a big erection, and it will show what that first Allfather looked like. In the next three chambers, as you go down this golden spiral road, is three more chambers, and that's his 12th son. Another golden statue, another Yehovah system sitting in three chambers. You go a little farther, there's the third generation. That's what the Bach or the Allfather looked like. And these chambers and chambers, and this golden spiral goes thousands of kilometers, millions of generations of this Bach family.
Wow.
And this is what's in the underworld. This is the storehouse for this story, for the history. because the men kept the history and the women made the future. And this is the his story. And they closed this temple up. They sealed it up in the year 987 because this Roman Catholics were coming up to Europe. The Greek Orthodox are coming up through the Greek, or what we call the Arab world today. And in 987, the Greek Orthodox got to Russia. These Osser people, this Bach family, they understood that now they had to seal this temple up. They couldn't let this church find what was inside it. Because this is the whole history. It's the whole story of humanity in gold. And so they sealed this place up. And when they sealed it up, they really did a job. Welcome to hell. I explained, because I was there from the beginning of the dig. I put the first shovel in 1987.
Wow.
So they sealed this thing up and they made it look very natural, because they knew that one of these Christian churches was going to come to get them one day, because the Greek Orthodox in 987, they sealed it up and they said that the Bach that was alive in 1,000 years, it was his obligation to open the temple. And Eeyore Bach, he was that Bach. In 1987, we were all sitting in India. He said, you know what, my family, the story came slowly, slowly. It didn't come all in one day. I sat many, many years with Eeyore to learn what I've learned. And he said, my family, there's a temple, there's a storehouse. And his family had gotten this land back, so we knew exactly where it was. And we're not looking for any temple. We know where it is. We're just trying to get to it. Hmm. And he told us about this Jehovah system, about this giving system, where people were offering these beautiful handicrafts in this storehouse. And on July 19, 1987, I started the dig. And we worked 4 summers. We took all the sand out. We came to rectangular stones and stones stuck into the mouth of the cave, and inside the cave was just all these rock walls. I mean, the whole place is man-made. They went to a lot of problem to close this thing up. There's just nothing natural about it. We had the most professional drilling masters blowing through these stones for us, and they said, this is completely man-made. In 1990, some friends of ours bought a little bit too much hashish up to Finland. We all got busted. I had to go to prison for, you know, some other people being greedy. But anyway, it's for hash. And since then, it sits there in the wait. But we're about 30, maybe 30, 40 meters down. And we're just going through rock walls. There's a perfect granite floor. There's a perfect granite ceiling. And down somewhere in front of us, there will be one golden door. And then when you go into that golden door, it's a door to the core. It's the core re-door. The core re-door. The door will read the core, and core is this hole in the top of the planet.
Wow.
Yeah. And that's what, inside a temple we call the Limenkainen temple. It can also be called the temple of Sul, Buk, and Balder. It can also be the temple of Odin.
Hmm. So knowing the location of this, what would it take to start this back up again? Because now you actually have problems from the authorities in Finland and apparently a museum as well, right?
No, I mean, to tell you the truth, it's a very big story, but the place got auctioned off. Eeyore's parents had his old few hundred-year-old house sitting there on the archipelago outside of Helsinki, 30 kilometers, in a place called Gumbustrand. And then the story goes on, but anyway, they auctioned this place off. And a really, really nice lady bought the house with the beach. But some friends of ours who are Ashtanga yoga teachers in Finland, really, really super, super great people, these two friends of mine, they both are instructors for Ashtanga yoga. They bought the entrance. They bought the land with the entrance to the temple. So the entrance to the temple is actually in It's in our possession. And these two people said we can go in there anytime we want to, and we don't have to get authority. People blow in Finland, they blow holes all the time with dynamite. So it could actually be going in. But I think that actually the best thing is I think that this saga has to go out. People have to start to understand what this story is about. To just bring the cameras in and start to show this golden spiral street going down and around this 180, you know, mile across cavern, you know, and with millions of chambers full of incredible stuff. You know, the human's not ready to see that yet. We need to find out. The saga has to come first. Yeah, there's other places in Finland where other things are buried too. There's many things there. The authorities, they won't let us dig up these other things because when Eeyore died, they thought it was over with. You know, we got rid of him. But just, you know, it just keeps coming. I don't know. And the story makes too much logic. You know, I was always looking for something that made sense. And yeah, it's really out there. I mean, this story is unbelievable. You can't even believe there's such a thing in the top of the planet. You can't believe that it could be one storehouse. And a little bitty temple, it's only got one piece of furniture. It's a divan. It's only for two people. There's one little bitty room at the top. So the temple is very, very small, but the storehouse underneath it, it's, you know, Steven Spielberg couldn't even come up with such a story.
Right.
Oh, it's beyond belief, but, you know, I don't believe the story. I understand the story, and there's a big difference between understanding and believing.
Mm-hmm.
A small boy comes to me and says, "Hey, uncle, where does my life come from?" I straight away, I point my finger to the sun. I said, "That big disc up there in the shine doesn't shine. You don't have a life. There's nothing living here. It's all black. The oceans are frozen. There's nothing. So your life comes from the sun." The kid can go, "Yeah, okay. My life comes from the sun. I can get that. But if I say there's some space cowboy up there in the vacuum who made the sun on the first day, he made the light on the first day, then you really have to go into an abstract concept that there's somebody out there who made the sun on the first day."
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's really belief. So I don't believe that the sun is making my life. I understand that the sun is making my life. I have to believe someone made the sun. So there's a big difference. You cannot change an understanding. I can add on to the understanding, but a belief you can change from day to day to day to day. There's no basis to it. But I will always understand that the sun is the source of our life. I cannot change that. And it's actually where the word discussion comes from. What we're having right now, one discussion. The sun is one discus. Because everything we say is coming from this discus, the sun. I mean, every word that we speak, if the sun didn't shine, we wouldn't be sitting here talking anything. So it's, you know, it's a concept that the source of consciousness is the sun.
Mm-hmm. Man, I got to let you go. Eventually, this has been amazing. I've talked to you for quite some time already. And of course, if anyone wants to hear more about this, you've got hours and hours on your YouTube page. Would you like to let the people know what might be coming up for your work in this Box Saga? You're about to take another trip. Maybe give the people some more information about where they can dig deeper.
There's a site in Finland where the archaeologists there, they started an excavation in 1995, which was after we started the temple excavation. And the site is over in South Finland. It's a huge cave. It's half the size of a football field. It has reinforced floors built inside of it. And this archaeologist, they start to go down into this floor and they see that there's fires that have been burned at the mouth of this cave. They find bones of mastodons, which are their Arctic elephants, mastodons. And they find tools that these people were making more than 120,000 years ago. The archaeologist puts the date on this. Now, 120,000 years ago, we have nothing, no artifacts, no anything anywhere that's 120,000 years. We have bones and stuff like that. Now, Michael Cremo and those kind of people, they have found things that are much older than that too, but 120,000 years is way beyond anything.
Right.
And now there was this settlement of people who were living in this ice time next to this Gulf of Finland. And in this saga, we talk about these people, how they were living in this. It's called the Atlantis time, how this group of people were progressively becoming white. They were making agriculture so they could grow food and store it for the winters. They were making domestic animals because we had to start eating meat. There's a very big story about how these people lived inside this Atlantis. But these people from this wolf cave in southern Finland, 120,000 years ago, this is one settlement of Atlantis. This is really one place where people, they weren't living in ivory towers. They were living a very basic life. They were eating mastodon. They were building fires. They were making tools, and they were living there in southern Finland 120,000 years ago, where the saga says there were people living there. They were white. They had white skin. They had blue eyes. They had yellow hair, and they spoke Finnish language 120,000 years ago. And that's what we're going to make our next story.
Nice. It backs up the story.
It backs up the story. That's what I do. I look for things that make the story true. It's also, we're going to make another piece on Gotland. It has a very big story in here. That's where they came out of the ice, too. It's where the Vikings come out. So we'll do another on this island that's between Sweden and Finland. And I just want to just tell you, Greg, I appreciate so much this opportunity today. Anyway, yeah, and I'm open to you anytime if you want to do another one. You know, I sit here and smoke pot all day and paint. I'm an artist and, you know, I really appreciate the opportunity for sure, Greg.
Yeah, man, it was great talking to you. You're a wealth of information, and you really do know this stuff really well, and I do appreciate it. Fascinating, great talking to you. Hopefully we can do this again, and maybe we can get down in that hole eventually. But until then, take care of yourself, man.
All right, you too. Keep on smoking.
Always.
Always, okay.
There we go, people. Another pretty out-of-the-box episode. But I think anyone who made it to the end here in either the 1 hour or the extended 2 hour show probably felt at least a little intrigue in this thing. It's dense stuff, requires a lot of explanation, but I love that a myth like this talks about the inner earth. And when you see some of Jim's videos on YouTube, especially the root language wheel, man, it just makes me want to know more. And I tried to jump around to aspects I found most interesting. It's a little disjointed, but I think we got to a lot of it. After the Harry Hubbard show, I felt like this also struck a similar chord in some ways when we're talking about the Helsinki hole, another place I'd love to just take a risk and go inside and stop all the guesswork, but it does make the story a little more interesting knowing there's a place you could actually go connected with it. As for the saga itself, I mean, what can I say? It's kind of like digging into Hattie Bob, just this little pocket of strange information that you can mine and see if anything resonates with you. I think the further you go with it, the more sense it makes. I think I said this in the intro, but I would rather get my information this way than through an education system we know is built for delivering very specific and selective information, all crafted by groups who don't have our best interest at heart. Much of it lies just to prop up their power. So yeah, let me take my chances with this E.R. Bach thing and the Gnostic rooster whisperer Jim Chesner. What do I got to lose? Besides, if you know your ancient Mesopotamian kings, then you might find another interesting phonetic link. You know, Sargon, Hammurabi, Ashurbanipal, and Gilgamesh. Thank you, they might be giants, but Ashurbanipal? There's something there. Maybe. You know, despite the audio issues, I thought Jim was a really fun guy to talk to. I tried to fix as much of it as I could in editing, but it is still a little rough at parts. Oh, and how wild that weed and hash charges are what put the brakes on the big excavation adventure when I have an app on my phone that will deliver these things to me within 15 minutes. I mean, that's a little crazy, right? But I do suggest the smokers burn one in the honor of the Bach family and Jim's willingness to preserve this information and reflect on what we've just heard and follow up with Jim's higher quality video breakdowns on YouTube, which Eric Edney has helped to make. He uses high-quality equipment and isn't reliant on internet connections, so I urge you to follow up there. The first one, I believe, is called Welcome to Hell. Also, Jim's Eight Powers videos are great. But if you want to go deeper with me on the line or encourage me to get Jim back on for more, sign up for Plus. We talk about several other aspects of the saga and how it ties into Krishna and Moses, deceivers of humanity, and a whole lot of other stuff, but you should sign up for this one. And last week's with Harry Hubbard and F. William Ingdahl and Jeff Berwick before that. It's been a great month so far. Pretty varied. The next show is going to cover new ground in the realm of secret sciences, ether theory, and alchemy. it really is going to require the full 2 hours, and it is a great one. A fun time with a Plus member, actually, who's never given an interview before. How about that? So help me grow the show to Demogorgon proportions, $5 at a time. If you can't afford it, but you really want it, email me about being a part of the new THC Digital Street team. And with that said, I've done what I can, brought some underground info out into the light, so I'm out of here. Your move, Box Saga Concealers. Your fucking move.
Sweet dreams to the elite. We're calling them out on THC. Uncovering secrets and conspiracies. Everybody's looking for something. Some of them want to use you. Some of them want to get used by you. Some of them want to abuse you. Some of them want to be abused.
Hey guys, thanks for listening to the first hour of the Higher Side Chats podcast with me, Greg Carlwood. If you don't know, there is a second hour to all the episodes we do around here. Generally, we're able to get a lot deeper into the topics and ideas that a guest is about, so if you enjoyed what you've heard from THC for free, consider signing up at thehighersidechatsplus.com to get the second hour of the 5 shows I put together each month. I never really wanted to be a paid subscriber podcast, but I really hate the idea of spending airtime promoting some product that's completely unrelated and telling you the best way to support the show is to buy an audiobook or new underwear by mail or something crazy like that. So instead, if you like the show, double your time with it for $5 a month and let's cut out all the other shit. It's half the price of a movie ticket and you get at least an extra 5 hours of show a month. Collectively, it keeps us stable and it frees me from wasting your time with anything but the show you came to listen to. It's really the only way for an independent, one-man show to make it, and I do what I can so that it's worth your while. Since we started this, I've always tried to use the subscriptions to improve the podcast and make signups more advantageous. It started with just a second hour for the main show, but now we've got a nice forum going where people can get deeper in conversation about the episodes with other listeners, submit a candidate in the guest request thread, or share their own personal projects to get out of the soul-crushing 9-to-5 cog-in-the-wheel life on the entrepreneurs thread. The forum and the plus comments are always the first places I try to go for listener engagement, but it does get harder as the show gets more popular. Because of that, there's also a direct messaging feature that you can use to reach me through the plus site also. But beyond the forum, if you like any of the music I've used for THC, most of it I've hired artists to make, and I provide it all as free downloads to Plus members too. So if you like a particular song you've heard close the show out recently, come get the MP3. I should also mention that if you don't like the idea of paying $5 recurring every month, I get that. You can buy 3 months, 6 months, or a year up front and just be done with it. I have plenty of listeners who send checks and money orders to the P.O. Box too. I try to make it as easy for people as I can, and you can read more about it on the sign-up page. Also, be sure to check out the FAQ help page on the Plus site if you have any questions or concerns about how to listen to a password-protected show on your devices. I've highlighted a lot of great solutions, and one of those would be the iPhone app that just recently hit the Apple App Store. A super kind and talented listener made it for us, and you can use it to stream or download either the free or the Plus show. If you're on Android, I'd use Pocket Casts or Podcast Addict and subscribe to the feed manually that way. I also try to throw in occasional bonus shows or Q&A shows, and I've got a few other weird ideas I might get to try out soon. but I give you all I can for $5, and I hope you'll at least give it a shot if you've listened to a few free shows and you find them unique or valuable. I know there's a lot of podcasts out there, and I'm just one of them. But if you have any questions, concerns, or comments about any of this, please get in touch with us at thehiresidechatsteam@gmail.com. I also wanted to plug the Higher Side newsletter I'm going to be putting out, totally free for anyone who wants to sign up at the main internet website for the show, thehiresidechats.com. You can also get on that email list through the Higher Side Chats Facebook page. There's a button there as well. But the reason I'm doing this is because I get tons and tons of emails after a show goes up asking me about how I feel about a particular guest or topic, and the wrap-up isn't always the best place to do that, especially if I have anything negative to say. Sometimes the dust needs to settle. Sometimes I need to hear feedback from you guys first. There are a lot of factors, but I usually have something to communicate to you, and I just don't get to do it. So on the first of the month, I plan to send out a little newsletter with my thoughts about the 5 shows the previous month and talk to you about anything else that's on my mind or that's going on. And what's probably most enticing is that I'm going to give you some insight into at least one guest I have coming up in the month, which people have been begging for some posted schedule for a long time. I personally think I'd like the surprise. But sign up for the Higher Side newsletter. It's free. It comes out on the first of the month, and I won't waste your time with any other emails. And that's it. I appreciate you listening. I try to give alternative ideas and guests a fair shake on a high-quality podcast, expose some deep-level conspiracies without the yelling, and I hope to offer some inspiration that even though the system relentlessly suggests you should follow their blueprint to mediocrity, you can do your own thing and live a much happier life despite all the negativity in the world. So go ahead and treat yourself. Isn't it about time?